Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So all the way up here, we have the Supreme Court nominee. And all the way down here, what could be a lower profile political race than the Democratic primary for New York City public advocate? And who could be a lower profile candidate than someone who is neither the incumbent Betsy Gottbaum nor her pretty well-known challenger Norman Siegel? The answer, Andrew Rache. That was the answer, but not anymore. Who would have thought that an obscure candidate for local office would find himself the hero of a piece by the New York Times influential World Affairs columnist Thomas Friedman? The column was yesterday, and it was almost all about Rache's proposals for setting up all of New York City with wireless and cell phone internet access, yes, including the subways. Andrew Rache, and that's, well, actually, you why don't you spell your name for our listeners? Hello.
Hello, good morning. It's spelled R-A-S-I-E-J. And for those in New York who want to remember it, just think of Shea Stadium, Andrew Rache.
Rache. Who are you? Where do you live? What have you done before? Why are you running for public advocate?
Well, I've lived in New York for about 30 years and started a number of businesses, one of which was I founded Irving Plaza, a very well-known music venue on Irving Place. And
you founded Irving Plaza?
I did. And while running Irving Plaza, I joined the community board and was asked by some local business leaders if I would help out with a school across the street from Irving Plaza called Washington Irving High School. And in 1997, I was starting to use the internet to help promote the nightclub and the music. And I walked into that school and discovered kids typing on Selectric typewriters. There wasn't a single computer anywhere in the school. So I found some donated computers, ordered a then $6,000, what's known as a T1 line, a connection to the internet, and sent an email to 10 of my friends asking them if they would come and help me wire the school to the internet and build a computer lab. And to my surprise, 200 people showed up. And so we went on to start a nonprofit organization called Mouse, which wired about 75 schools, but we quickly learned that just putting computers and technology in schools isn't really the problem. It's really using the technology for learning. And so we developed a program where, you know, we couldn't find money for teachers, much less people to run the computers. So we developed a program where students actually build the networks and run the technology and fix the computers in their schools. That program is now in 100 schools in New York. It's 1,000 kids in the program, serving 90,000 other kids, 6,000 teachers.
Great.
In 8 states and 20 countries. But this is the best statistic. 90% of the kids in the program graduate and go to college. So I have a big belief that technology is an empowering tool to change some of the dynamics that exist around all our problems.
So before we get to the proposal that got you written up by Thomas Friedman yesterday, for the uninitiated, what is Wi-Fi?
Well, it's wireless fidelity. But for me and for many technology people, it's really a metaphor for being able to connect people, whether it's Wi-Fi or WiMAX or any other succeeding technology that's coming down the road. It is the opportunity to bring everybody access to information in a quick and reliable way that helps change the ability of people to interact with each other and interact with their government.
The city of Philadelphia is building a citywide Wi-Fi infrastructure. Is that the kind of thing you have in mind for New York?
That is exactly the kind of thing that we have in mind in New York. And I'm sorry that New York is not leading the nation on this issue and that we're following a city like Philadelphia and, in fact, following Boston, Austin, Texas, San Francisco, Minneapolis, and woefully behind many countries around the world.
They're all doing it? Boston, Austin, those other cities that you mentioned?
That's correct.
Citywide Wi-Fi.
Correct.
Paid for by the taxpayers?
Not exactly, not in every case. The program in Philadelphia is actually a government-enhanced mm-hmm. program. And there's different models in different parts of the country, but the model that I'm advocating here is that the infrastructure of New York City would be made available to telephone poles, public buildings, public parks, et cetera, would be made available to a range of companies, more than just Verizon and Time Warner and Cablevision, to offer wireless nodes in a mesh form that would spread over the entire city and allow anyone to connect in a public place or street for free.
And so what would get these companies to do it? Because I know there are opponents of these municipal Wi-Fi programs, opponents in the private sector who say the government should not be the universal internet service provider or guarantor. It will come with all the problems and bureaucracy of the old monopoly phone system. They say let the market provide Wi-Fi, which it will if the demand grows.
We actually have a market failure here in New York. We have two companies in any borough that are providing broadband connectivity, either Verizon, Time Warner, or Verizon Cablevision. And there are sections of our town that actually do not have access to broadband. And worse, there are many working-class families that can't afford to pay $50, $60 a month, $500, $600 a year to access broadband information. Other parts of the country are offering it for $10 to $15 a month. Other countries are offering it for free to their citizens. 70 years ago, there was a Universal Service Act that required that Ma Bell would provide dial tone to every single resident in the country in order for it to maintain its monopoly. You didn't have to buy a phone, but if you wanted dial tone, it was going to be delivered on the prairie, wherever you were. Well, we have a similar situation here where Verizon doesn't want to invest in our poor neighborhoods because they don't believe that there's a market for them there.
My guest is New York City public advocate candidate Andrew Roche, running in the Democratic primary on September 13th, and we're talking primarily about his proposal for a citywide Wi-Fi or wireless internet access in New York City. And then what would this get us? I mean, sure, it sounds like a cool thing to be able to walk down the street with your computer and log on to the web, but you obviously have some higher public purpose.
Yeah, it's not just about your computer. It's not actually about that laptop. It's about all the other devices that now access the internet, cell phones, PDAs, and other kinds of devices, and the ones that are coming down the pike. But more importantly, this is about economic development. It's about jobs, it's about healthcare, it's about education and security. Imagine if parents, teachers, and students were able to connect on a 24-hour network to the way our Fortune 500 companies have their employees and their customers connected and their suppliers. Firemen being able to download blueprints of a burning building on their way to a fire. Subways and buses telling us when they're going to arrive. Being able to dial 911 on a subway platform and being able to see something and actually say something. EMS workers being able to get medical information in an ambulance when they're taking care of somebody.
Now, let me jump in there because I see that you've come with a prop. It's a little plastic case here with a label. If you see something, say something, MTA Emergency Communication System. And inside here we have, two tin cans and a string, it looks like.
That's correct. And the idea there is, frankly, that the MTA's current See Something and Say Something campaign has a fatal flaw. There is not an ability for New Yorkers who are being asked to use their eyes and their ears and their minds to help keep us safe. There's not an ability for those people to quickly communicate with emergency service personnel or their loved ones in the event of an emergency.
See if it works. If you see something, say something. Well, it's not as good as the internet.
Seconds mean life or death. And in this day and age, and the priority should be to make sure that every New Yorker not only a sense of feeling safe, but can actually act on being safe.
And one of the things in the Thomas Friedman column was a comparison to Tokyo, which I'll bet most Americans didn't know, where you can use cell phones in the subways, you can use wireless internet in the subways. And yet I'm sure a lot of New Yorkers hear this and they think, oh my God, can you really get emergency cell phone service, down there where the L train runs and all that?
Well, frankly, half of New York City subways are above ground and you can actually use a cell phone there. But the problem is in the tunnels of where the subways run underground, we don't have cell phone service, and I think it needs to be made a priority. More importantly, the city of New York needs to start thinking of itself as a world-class city again, because frankly, we're falling behind other major cities in getting onto the information superhighway.
What will this cost?
We're estimating in New York City it's going to cost about $80 million, which is about $10 per person to build.
That's very little in, municipal budget terms. So you think $80 million, one-time expense, and then we're permanently wired to the internet citywide?
Yeah, most likely. In fact, once 8 million people are wired, you can think of all the companies that are going to be wanting to advertise and actually give equipment to New Yorkers to be able to access each other and to enter their advertising.
But it'll be hard to do all over New York City, won't it? And maybe more expensive than that. I live in a co-op with a building-wide T1 Wi-Fi, and the connection varies from room to room just in my apartment.
There are always going to be technological challenges, but the notion of making sure that we have as much connectivity as possible is already being done in other cities. And the analogy here is that, other cities are using ATMs for their banking. New York still has its banks closing at 3 o'clock on Fridays.
What else do you want to do as public advocate?
Well, here's the real reason I'm running for this office. There are tens of thousands of public advocates in this city who are working in neighborhoods, solving problems, joining community boards, feeding the homeless, cleaning up parks, mentoring in schools. But they're not connected to each other. And this is why the wireless idea and the idea of connecting everyone is so important, because the public advocate's primary responsibility is making sure that people have a voice. And if you go to a public hearing today at the city council, you'll discover that very often no one from the public is there. Very often the hearing happens at 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning when most working class families can't come. And so the idea here is that instead of one person standing on a soapbox wagging their finger at the mayor, which our current public advocate has tried to do and been woefully ignored, we build a network of public advocates so that whenever there's any issue on a given subject, we can bring them together, amplify their voices, build their coalition, and have them put pressure on the city government to act.
Have you gotten a reaction from your opponents for public advocate, Norman Siegel and Betsy Gottbaum? And I have to admit, I don't know if there's anybody else in this race. Or from Mayor Bloomberg on your Wi-Fi proposal?
No, actually, Mayor Bloomberg has a plan for Wi-Fi, saying that the market will take care of itself. Not in any sentence in the plan does it mention working families and the fact that they're overpaying. We're estimating close to $400 million to Verizon and Cablevision for something that's not even, it's not oil and so forth. So, unfortunately, there's a lack of vision on the part of our existing leadership. And I don't believe that Betsy Gottbaum really even understands what Wi-Fi is. In fact, I think she, like most politicians, doesn't know the difference between a server and a waiter.
We have about a minute left. We will be broadcasting the public advocate debates before the primary here on WNYC. We'll tell you about the dates and times when those debates get closer. The primary is on September 13th. But, a lot of people say do away with the whole office because it's an office without a function. It was a function for press releases under Mark Green, less than that under Betsy Gottbaum. Can you make it a meaningful office?
Sure. Any politician only has power because of people, and the ability to organize people and get them to come to city government is a key function that I think the public advocate has to be able to do. But the second piece, and many people forgot about this, is that in 1993, a commission on public information, which is part of the city charter for the public advocate's office, stopped being funded because Giuliani cut Mark Green's budget. And that commission is responsible to make sure that government is open and transparent. That commission, in my administration, is going to be reconstituted.
New York City public advocate hopeful Andrew Rasieh, that's Rasieh, running in the Democratic primary on September 13th. He's written up big time in Thomas Friedman's column in the New York Times yesterday. Thanks a lot. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.